When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Brent Hubbs and Rob Lewis. We got a big show coming up here today, and we couldn't do it without our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions, the presenting sponsor of the VolQuest podcast. If you have a need, give them a call for a free estimate. That's at 865-524-5888 or online at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com. We're going to talk a whole lot of Tennessee hoops, Tennessee spring football practice, a little Tennessee baseball. But first, some breaking news on Monday afternoon. Brent, after five seasons with the program, former three-time national champion as a player, Lady Vol Kelly Harper, is not being retained, will not return for the Lady Vols next year, and the nationwide search for the next Lady Vols coach has begun. Some quick thoughts on the change in leadership for the Lady Vols basketball program.
Well, I hate it for Coach Harper and her family. They were, all invested in everything Tennessee, but it's a bottom line business. It's a wins and loss business, and she did not move the program forward to the way that she needed it to, and the way that the expectations were for it to be. I think Danny White wrestled with this. I don't think this has been done for any length of period of time. I think this is something that he wrestled with even over the weekend. Before making the decision on Monday, she gets $2.2 million or thereabout with a buyout. And now the search is on. And the question now is, for the first time ever, are they going to go outside the Lady Vol family? It would appear that that's likely to be the case. I think Danny White is looking for a proven winner, not an up-and-comer. I think he wants somebody who's probably got some established credentials. So we'll see where he lands and see where this goes. Typically, when you make a move, guys, you have somebody in mind or a couple people in mind as to who you want to be there. And in the day and age of the transfer portal, with it being open right now, you got to go pretty fast. I mean, this is not something that needs to drag out 3 or 4 weeks. I think you got to go pretty quick in this deal here. So we'll see. Certainly a changing time at Tennessee with the fact that it might not be someone from the Pat Summitt tree that's coaching the Lady Vol basketball program next fall.
Yeah, I was going to say, five seasons, 108-52 overall record, 53-24 in conference play, back-to-back Sweet 16 appearances, not this year, but the two previous. She had a second-round exit this year. As you mentioned, I think in terms of Danny White, and we'll see what direction he goes, but this is going to be his hire. Doesn't have to be from inside the family. Doesn't have to be a female, a male. Regardless, it feels like, Brent, he's going to make the hire that he thinks is best, and regardless of who that individual is or where that person is right now.
Well, I mean, your investment, Rob, is going to be at an all-time high. You've never invested this much into women's basketball. When you talk about paying $2.2 million for a coach to go away, and then you're going to hire somebody who's going to have a buyout there, that doesn't include Coach Harper's staff. So your investment into this is at a place it's never been at before. Because when Pat Summitt stepped down because of her illness, you promoted from within Holly Warwick. Okay. And then when you went and hired Coach Harper, you got her from Southeast Missouri State. That was not an expensive get. You're spending some real money here for the first time in this program, Rob. I think it's going to be interesting to see where you land. And I think it does have to be someone who's not perceived to be a risk up and coming, someone who's got some credentials to them and got a resume to them.
Yeah, I'm pretty fascinated by it as an observer, because I mean, there are a lot more people that are a lot more qualified than me to talk about the Lady Vols. I'll be very upfront about that.
Me too.
But I'm interested. I'm interested, Harper. How do you think Danny views it? I mean, does he look at it as a showpiece of the athletic department? Is it important for him, I wonder, to raise it to the level, of where it is, historically, as the most iconic women's basketball program in history? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm curious as to how he views it. Is it important to him, to his legacy as an athletic director at Tennessee, to restore, what this program was, and what it was, you know, the absolute pinnacle, the apex. I mean, what every other, you know, women's basketball program strived to be for decades. And I'm curious. I mean, is that important to him? I don't know. I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but I think it's interesting.
Well, I think the statement he's making right now is, yes, it's important, because you're going to spend a bunch of money to pay someone not to coach in the program.
No.
Which has never been the case before. I mean, you could have waited another year and the buyout drops another $500,000.
That's a good point.
You know, I mean, the bottom line with women's basketball is it's never going to be profitable. Okay. If you win a national title, if you don't win a national title, it's never going to be about making money with that sport. So then it gets back to your question, Rob, what's the priority of the sport? What are you trying to do? The legacy of the program speaks for itself when you look at what Pat Summitt created, not just in Tennessee, but in the brand of women's basketball. I think the game is growing. I think interest in the game has grown in large part because of Caitlin Clark. And look how many people were interested in the Monday night matchup, right, between Iowa and LSU, because you think you might have a fight. You know, there's drama. There's things going on there, but there's interest there. And so I think that's why you've got to, Eric, if you're Danny White and you look at this, it's hard to sell someone who's not proven themselves at this level, right? I mean, last two hires, and listen, I think the world of Coach Harper. I've dealt with her on a weekly basis. I think she is one of the finest human beings as a coach that I've ever covered, and I hated that it didn't work. But she's had two opportunities at Power Five schools, and neither one of them worked out, NC State and now Tennessee. You promoted from within with Holly Warlick, which made a lot of sense at the time that you made the promotion. So you've taken chances with two former players who were unproven at this level. Can you afford to do that at this point in time? I don't think you can, which means you're going to spend more money than you've ever thought about spending in the sport. And who wants to take on the monster of rebranding to some degree and rebuilding the legacy that is the Lady Vol program? And I think that's going to be an interesting search for Danny White.
Yeah, it's tough for sure. And especially anytime not even taking into account the Lady Vol brand, but anytime you hire a former player to come back to your alma mater, it's risky on both sides. And you know, Kelly Harper, she was quoted in the release yesterday sent out by Tennessee, said, quote, it's been an honor to serve my alma mater and coach Lady Vol program that I love so dearly. I'm grateful for the opportunity my staff have had to lead this amazing group of young women, to mentor them on the court as well as provide them with life skills that will benefit them beyond the game of basketball. And we know Danny White, really good at his job, really good at making money and all that type of stuff. And I'm not saying that nonprofit sports are not important to him, because, again, he's athletic director. He oversees all that. But I'm intrigued to see. I agree with you, Brent. I feel like you're gonna have to go out and get a proven winner because of what this brand means. If you were satisfied with it, then you would have kept her on for another year. I mean, she just had 4 20-win seasons and coming off back-to-back Sweet 16. So we'll see what they like to do. But we do know that this brand, not just big in women's basketball. I mean, this brand's big in women's sports in general, from whatever everything Pat Summitt did here. And that's a tall task to live up to for sure. So, wishing the best to Kelly Harper. Tennessee makes the move there. Let's move on here in this podcast and talk Tennessee men's basketball. Rob Lewis, fun season. We'll kind of talk about all that here in a moment. And, you know, one of the better seasons for Rick Barnes here at Tennessee and professionally for him. But, you know, Tennessee bows out in the Elite Eight. So very close to the program's first ever Final Four, 72-66. And at the end of the day, there was no answer for Zach Edey. He's a really good player. It's also really tough when you can't do anything and you send him to the line for 22 free throw attempts.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to be objective here, because I mean, I think I have a pretty good track record of not being a complete homer, and I want to steer clear of that. But man, I mean, just I don't know how you could be an objective observer who didn't have a rooting interest in either team in that game and not think that Zach Edey absolutely got away with murder in that game. And I'm not even talking so much about you know, Tennessee fouling him. I'm not even talking so much about him taking 22 free throws. I'm talking about him knocking the hell out of people and sending them flying.
First foul for all day long. He committed 9 minutes left in the game. How's that possible when you're 7'4", 300 pounds?
Well, when you're the biggest, most physical player in all of college basketball, not in that game, not in the Midwest region, in all of college basketball. And I just, again, I'm not blaming it on the ref. And Rick Barnes, to his credit, I give him credit. He steered a million miles away after the game yesterday in Detroit from saying anything negative about the officials, anything. But it's not so much the 22 free throws. It's the fact that he finished the game with one foul, and in a 40-minute game, I bet he spent 38 minutes in the lane. That to me, more than the 22 free throws, the no 3 second calls, and the fact that he finished that game with one foul, to me is amazing. And again, he's a great player. I really don't want to have sour grapes. I think Purdue's probably better than Tennessee, but Tennessee was going to have to shoot about 60% in that game yesterday to win with the way it was officiated, with what Edie was allowed to do. And I think Connecticut is by far and away the best team in college basketball. But if the national championship gets officiated like that, send Purdue the trophy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Rob. I mean, in the fact that, I mean, Tennessee fouled him. Tennessee fouled him a bunch. And they probably fouled him a bunch of times that didn't get called, okay, as well. I mean, it was grabbing and tugging and pulling. And I give Matt Painter credit. I think he tried to set a storyline prior to the game about Tennessee's physicality. So I think everybody was a little bit on point with that. It's just, and it wasn't just a Tennessee game, but if you watch Edie play throughout the year, I think he's gotten away with a ton of push-offs for rebounds. And I think that he's got a favorable whistle. And I think that's unfortunate because I think he's such a good player. He doesn't need a favorable whistle.
100%. I want to make it clear, Hubbard, that I'm not trying to denigrate him.
I'm with you 100%. I mean, he deserves. I mean, he's player of the year, right? I mean, he's the player of the year in the country, and deservingly. I got no problem with that. I just don't think he at 7'4" and 300 pounds. I don't think he needs any help. I do think what's going to be interesting is if you're going to beat Purdue, you got to shoot it great from the perimeter, obviously. The other thing too, Rob, I think offensively, you have to have a five who can face or can make a play from 12 or 15 feet. That's not just a straight block-to-block post-up guy, because that's where Edie's going to win. Can you make him play in space to some degree? Tennessee never could do that on Saturday. Adu didn't make the early face-up jumpers. That's not a Waka's game. They just didn't have anybody who could do anything and force Edie to play outside of his comfort zone, which is obviously the painted area on both ends of the floor where he never moves. Can anybody left in the tournament do that? I don't think DJ Burns and NC State can do that, although he's been fun to watch. But somebody has to be able to try to make him play defense at a non-comfort level. And I think Kenny Smith said this postgame yesterday, Tennessee was just unable to do that with their offensive production in the post or lack thereof.
Yeah, and I don't think any of us do ever take any delight in being critical of a college kid in any sport. But, man, I mean, Tennessee was going to have Jonas wasn't going to have a big game, but he had to be some kind of a factor, and he just wasn't. And that was really significant yesterday. And the fact, I mean, the kid was a first-team All-SEC player, and his head coach benched him in the final 17 minutes of an Elite Eight game and played a true freshman. I know it's getting talked about some, but that's a big deal. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and again, in the Creighton game, I understand part of that decision because Awaka was not in foul trouble and was playing really well, right, in the deal. So, Jonas watched a lot the second half against Creighton because he wasn't playing really well and struggled with the pick and roll stuff. But boy, to go and say to JP Estrella, hey, big man, you've got the national player of the year. Cause I've got more confidence in you defensively right now than I do in Jonas Adu.
It was a first team all SEC player.
Yeah. It's a significant statement. And, You know, again, I use this stat, Rob, and it's probably overblown. It's probably making too big a deal out of something. But since the start of conference play, Tennessee was 6-4 when Adu, Ziegler, and Kinnick scored less than 50 points combined. That was the magic number. They lost two games after January when they scored more than 50 points combined. The trio did. They got to 46 on Sunday, and it just wasn't enough. They needed more points from Ziegler and Adu to have a chance to win that basketball game.
I don't think you're making too much of it at all. I'm a long way from being the only person that stumbled onto this, but I think myself and a lot of people in November and early December were thinking, you know, it's going to be Zakai, Dalton, and either, you know, Josiah or Santi. And, you know, it obviously never, you know, Josiah started, had a really nice start to the year, but it obviously never worked out that way. And sometime in December, it just occurred to everybody that this was a three-headed monster, but it wasn't the three heads you thought it was going to be. It was Adu and Zakai and Dalton. And I mean, I think you're exactly right, Robert. I don't think you're making too much of it. When those three guys played well and produced, Tennessee was hard to handle, really hard to handle it, because, you know, you got the fantastic point guard. You got a productive big man down low that the defense, you know, has to pay attention to. And it just created space. It created room for Zakai to operate, for Dalton to do his thing. And yeah, as you said, it wasn't the case yesterday.
Couple of 7-0 runs in the second half. Of course, Purdue ended the first half when Tennessee led by as many as 11 with about 9 and some change left in that first half. Ended the first half on a 15-2 run, kind of set the table for the second half. But it was Edey. It was Dalton Kinnick. You hate for this ride to be over for this team. You hate for this ride to be over for Dalton Kinnick in this historic, awesome year. But he did go out being Dalton Kinnick, 37 points. And it felt like, Rob, and again, Rick Barnes has kind of said this throughout the season at points in times, when he's on this kind of heater that he is, it's almost like you still got to try to work to get other people involved, because towards the end of the game, he was working so hard to get open just to get the basketball. When Tennessee was playing catch up, by the time he got the basketball, a lot of the times the shot clock was dwindling down and he was already tired. You know, we mentioned Adu wasn't the best game for Zakai Ziegler. Josiah had a good offensive first half, not so much in the second half. It just felt like Dalton, though as incredible as he was in this game, again, didn't have the help that he needed, you know, in the second half to try to play catch up and try to solidify a lead.
Well, he 100% did have it. I mean, Tennessee took 62 shots in the game yesterday, and Dalton took 31 of them. I mean, that's not how you want to play basketball. And I think you're exactly right, EC. I mean, I think he was worn out. He played 37 minutes, and I mean, it wasn't, you know, 37 minutes of standing around. It's like what you're talking about. He's working hard to get open, you know, to get the ball and to try and make something happen. And yeah, I mean, it's just it was. I never saw it coming, what he did this year. I mean, I thought he was going to be a nice player just based on what I'd heard. I mean, he was phenomenal. I mean, Rick Barnes didn't know it. I don't care. I mean, and he'll tell you the same thing. I mean, he thought, everybody thought Tennessee was getting a good player, but nobody thought that the kid who didn't even make all conference, you know, last year in the Big Sky was going to be the SEC player of the year and do what he did. I mean, it was phenomenal. And I just can't stress enough what it was like to watch him. We won't see it again. We will not see a kid go to JUCO, go from there to some mid-major where he's, you know, not even an all-conference player and then come to a Power 5 conference and do what Dalton did. I just do not think we'll see it again.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote it Sunday night. I mean, if there's another one-year – I mean, if there's another one-year guy comes through and is that, I certainly would like to see what that one-year guy looks like. I hope I get the chance to watch him and cover him, because I mean, it was phenomenal what Dalton Kinnick did all year long, and we could talk about him for forever. One thing closing out the Purdue game before we get into kind of roster big picture stuff moving forward, Rob, I was a little surprised that with Josiah getting off to the quick start and the good start that he got to, that offensively there was a bit of a disappearing. He just wasn't a factor down the backstretch of the first half and early second half. It's almost like the disengagement of him offensively didn't help Tennessee's rhythm at all. And I don't know what Purdue did to take him away, if anything, or what, you know, you got those couple of early looks, and then it was just kind of non-existent there in terms of him having some opportunities to, I didn't think he passed up on open looks. I mean, he went a long stretch before he shot that one 15 footer in the last couple of minutes that he missed, which was a good shot, but guy, he hadn't shot the ball in an hour and a half.
That was the only shot he took in the second half.
Yeah. I was really surprised that he was not more of a factor when he appeared to be an offensive rhythm the way he was early in the game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because, I mean, we've seen Joe, and I really like Josiah. Josiah has been one of my favorite kids that's come through this program. Great, great guy. So I'm not trying to be critical of him, but when we've seen him just kind of, you know, not be there sometimes offensively, especially in SEC play. But when he starts off solid, then he, you know, generally, you know, he's going to be a factor. And he was solid yesterday early. 3 of 3. He hit 2 3-pointers in the first half that were huge, that were part of, you know, staking Tennessee to that 11-point run. And even more than Dalton, because I expect Dalton to go up there and just destroy people. That is not a surprise, even whether it happens in the Elite Eight or in the Dean Dome or what. He will give people the business no matter what. But Josiah, you know, it's hit or miss. When he starts off, you know, like that, then, you know, usually – or generally, I think he gets a little pep in his step, and he's going to be there. So to me, I'm right on board with you, Hubbard. Josiah's play in the first half had me thinking, you know, Tennessee needs that. That's exactly what they needed for him.
Yeah.
You know, somebody besides Dalton. And then it just wasn't there in the second. And it's not Josiah's fault they lost that game. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But if he was 3 for 3 in that first half with 8 points.
And he took one shot in the second half.
If he scores, you know, 8-10 points in the second half, Tennessee's maybe heading to Phoenix.
And again, you don't have a 7'4" guy on your team, but getting out rebounded 47-26 is not going to help matters at all. There's many reasons, all you know, that you can point to say why Tennessee lost this game.
But they, and I don't want to. I'm not saying, you know, give them a participation trophy or anything. But Tennessee belonged there. They didn't choke.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
they did not choke. They showed up. It was a heavyweight fight.
It was a Final Four.
And they got beat by a team that is a, you know, may win the national championship. I mean, there's nothing to hang their heads over.
Yeah. After, yeah. And it's a team that's a tough matchup. They play 10 times. I'm not sure Tennessee wins maybe a couple of them, right? Yeah, I mean, because Tennessee had to play really, really well to have a chance. But that was a heavyweight fight. It was – look, that's what's supposed to happen in the Elite Eight when your bracket goes chalk and it's 1 versus 2. Those are supposed to be Donnybrooks. That was a Donnybrook. You know, you can debate seedings and, you know, this, that. I mean – the fact of the matter is Tennessee played in the Final Four caliber game the weekend ahead of time, and they put on a great show, and it was a terrific basketball game to cap off what I think, Rob, was a terrific season for this Tennessee basketball program. I mean, if you didn't enjoy watching this team play this year, then I'm not sure about where you are as a basketball fan, because they played a pretty brand of basketball on both ends of the court. It wasn't perfect every night. They lost some games here and there. But for the most part, man, they were fun to watch.
And I mean, kind of on that, I mean, this is the best team in program history, right? I mean, that's my opinion.
Most accomplished team.
And it's up for debate, sure, yeah, but most accomplished.
I think, Rob, you can debate, you know, was Grant and Admiral and those guys more talented 1 through 5? You know, you got – I'm not old enough to remember. I didn't watch Bernard and Ernie play in person or anything like that to know where that – but when you look at accomplishments, there's not a debate in my mind that this is the most accomplished Tennessee basketball team in program history.
Yeah, I think the Grant Admiral team, I would love, you know, it's obviously impossible, it's just barstool conversation, but I would love to see that team and this team play a 7-game series. I think that would be an absolute knockdown drag out. And no disrespect to the Elite Eight team that lost to Michigan State. That, I mean, they got hot. They went on a nice run, but that team was inconsistent. I mean, Hubbard, you were there. I mean, they were talented. They were lots of fun, and I'm not, you know, taking a shot at them. I mean, they did what they did, and they were a really good team. But I don't think, you know, night in night out, they were as good as this team or the Grant Williams Admiral teams. And this team, Hubbard, you know, I mean, kids that are 8, 9, 10 years old, they're gonna always remember Dalt Connect. Oh. They're gonna always remember Zakai Ziegler. I mean, the way I remember Dell Ellis, or, you know.
Or the way somebody older than us remembers Bernard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ernie Grunfeld. I'm not saying Dalton Connect is that, but in terms of your childhood memory, there's a group of kids that are 7 to 15, 14, whatever. That's their dude, man. I mean, that's the guy because he put on a show for him all winter long.
And it will never be, I mean, this team will never be forgotten. And it will take some time. People have to get some distance on that. And, you know, fans are disappointed because, you know, you had a great crack at making your first Final Four ever and you didn't. But this team will be remembered super fondly. It'll be remembered like the Elite Eight team, you know, from 2010 or Bruce's Elite Eight team. It'll, you know, or what you thought for any sport. I mean, what I'm trying to say, this one's going to go down in the fabric of Tennessee athletics. This team is not going to be forgotten.
Real quick before we let you go, Rob, as Brent pointed out a moment ago, let's quickly kind of run down some roster management. What we do know right now is
these days.
What we do know is a couple of 5th-year seniors are gone.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be
that's losses. All you know in this day and age.
Yeah, three of them, Santi, and then from there you got to recruit your roster, and then of course look at the transfer portal.
Yeah,
what directions do you think? Rick
and I'm not trying to start any rumors, but you really do just have to in this day and age. Everybody's a question mark. I mean, they just are. I mean, I don't know that anybody's leaving right now, but it's kind of silly to think that somebody won't.
Yep.
When you see what's out there. I mean, first off, I mean, obviously you got to get some scoring on the perimeter. I mean, you're losing, Dalton for sure, but you know, Josiah, Santi, those guys have played a ton of minutes. You got to get some perimeter help. I mean, Cam Carr, I think is, you know, assuming he's back, and I think he will be, is going to step up and have a huge role next year, but he's not being Dalton Connect. If Freddie's around, he's a guy that I think is a plug and play guy in the perimeter. But you've got to replace the production there, and then frankly, you just have to wait and see who you get back. I mean, the one thing, you know, you got to get some size and some scoring on the wing. After that, I mean, I think it really is a waiting game, and it won't be a long waiting game. Hubbard, like you were talking about, the same reason that, you know, Danny White needs to hire a women's basketball coach quick. You know, kids have got to make decisions, and coaches need to know.
Yeah, in a hurry, they do. I'm curious, Rob, just when you look at the makeup, and let's just assume a bunch of guys are coming back, okay? Now, we know there's going to be some changes because that's inevitable. Can Jemai Meshack – I mean, this is a guy who was a point guard a year ago in the NCAA tournament. Can he take on the Josiah Jordan James role moving forward and even play some stretch four? Because – athletically, he can get the ball to the paint, you know, and offensively, and do some things there. He's not a great 3-point shooter, but he plays more physical than he probably weighs. I mean, what's his niche moving? Because he's going to play a much more prominent role next year than he did this year. And I think he was terrific this year.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I think he rolls right into the Josiah, you know, Swiss Army knife, plays the four. I mean, at least plays that on defense, at least guards. You know, the four on defense. I mean, and I think he's, and again, not saying anything bad, I think it'd be an upgrade defensively. I mean, I don't know if people really appreciate just what a monster Jemai is. Strength-wise for his size, his athleticism, and hard worker. I mean, I think that's a seamless transition for him to roll in there and have his minutes. If he averaged probably 18, 19 this year, I think he's a, you know, 28, 30-minute guy next year. I think that's probably Rick Barnes' easiest move for the guys that are leaving.
I mean, I thought so too, but you know, he didn't really play that role. I mean, he was a Swiss Army knife in a lot of places other than kind of there, it felt like. You know, there's a lot of times he's, you know, again, a year ago he was a point guard on this basketball team. So just was kind of curious as to where you thought his next step, where his kind of final step.
And another guy, Hubbard, that I think is, I think what JP Estrella, I think those 15 minutes he played yesterday, I think he grew up so much. I mean, he didn't shut Zach Edey down. Nobody is, but he didn't back down from that challenge.
He battled his rear end off. I mean, he gave you everything. You got that game tied. I guess it was tied for the second time on his dunk on the pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And he had given you everything you needed to have a chance to tie that game and steal it late. Because of what he had done and just the way he had battled. He had forced Edey to miss a couple of shots because he forced him to turn the other way, and he had just made him work the whole time. I mean, I couldn't be more impressed with a guy who played such a minimal role to come in and to play in that situation like that was just crazy. And I mean, I thought he did more than admirable job for the role he was put into and the situation he was thrust into.
I thought it was, I mean, it's crazy to think he played 15 minutes yesterday. That's the most he played all season. in the Elite Eight. And assuming that everybody's back, I mean, I think Tennessee's bigs next year are going to be solid.
You just got to teach Tobey not to foul, man. If he can stay on the court, I think he's got a chance to be really, really good. And I think they've got three big time post, you know, three real post players there that you can do some different things with. And you can play two bigs at once.
I think Cade Phillips is going to be able to help him. I mean, that's a guy that back in November, the staff probably liked him more than they liked JP in November. And, you know, JP, you know, kept coming on, but I'm really high on Estrella. I love kids that were guards and then grew like 6, 7, 8 inches like JP did it and still have some of those skills. I don't sleep on JP Estrella. Don't sleep on
it. Rob, you and Grant, love the coverage this year. It was fun watching you guys in the NCAA tournament, and I'm looking forward to your coverage on roster management. There's no time off ever, and we'll see what this team looks like next year, the next couple of weeks.
We all love the portal.
All right, boys. I'll see you at spring practice this week.
Rest up. Rest well.
See you guys.
See you, buddy. And as we thank Rob Lewis and Grant Ramey for their coverage, let's give a quick thanks to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the VolQuest podcast.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust. And that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Again, that phone number for our friends Exterior Home Solutions, 865-524-5888, or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. All right, we got a couple of minutes left here on this edition of the VolQuest podcast. Scrimmage number one is in the books. They scrimmaged on Wednesday, had a four-day holiday break for Easter, came back and hit the practice field hard and long on Monday, and gearing up for a practice on Wednesday, and then they'll scrimmage again on Thursday night at Neyland Stadium. Brent, some of the big takeaways now entering week number three of spring practice, and of course, scrimmage one in the rearview mirror.
Well, I think for now it's about which of these young guys take a step forward, because now you're adding more stuff. Guys' heads are swimming a little bit. Who comes out on the other side of that, right? I think you got a great idea of where you are on the defensive line. I think you know where some of your starters are on the offensive line. I'm not saying you completely shut some people down, but at this point, I don't think you want to risk injury for some guys who you know are going to help you and you know are in good shape. And then it's about, you know, where are you in the secondary with the transfer guys? Where's Chris Brazzle, who had a really nice scrimmage? You know, in terms of that wide receiver competition, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. You've got to figure out what you are at running back over the course of the next 2 weeks to decide if you need to go portal hunting or not go portal hunting with the injury to Cam Seldon. I think when you look at offensive priorities, that may be the biggest priority left for this spring, because that dictates your next move. You were never going to solve the left guard situation in spring ball, right, Eric? I mean, I don't think any of us thought they were going to walk out of spring and go, that's the guy. You walk out of spring and you have to make the declaration because the window is there. Do I need another tailback? Or am I good until Cam Seldon returns late September, 1st of October?
Yeah, I mean, you took the words out of my mouth. That left guard battle is going to go into camp. Those, you know, we'll see how big the rotation is at wide receiver, but those guys are going to be battling all throughout camp. And Thornton's had a good spring. Brazzle's had a good spring. Staley, Mike Matthews have made some noise. You know, Squirrel's there. Of course, you have those two, you know, second-year players going on third-year players, and Nimrod and Caleb Webb. Will be interested to see with them in the second window of the transfer portal. But all those battles were going to linger into fall camp. You got to figure out if you have confidence in Khalifa Keith and Deshaun Bishop, because if you don't, then you got to go out and get a body in the transfer portal. And sure, you don't want to just take a body, and maybe that was poor phrasing because I don't think they'll take just anybody, but you need to go get some help in the transfer portal. So I think that is the biggest to-do left on the spring to-do list, if you will. And then I know recency bias here because they spoke yesterday, but some interesting comments coming out of Willie Martinez and some of those defensive backs. I think Jalen McMurray, a lot of good things were said of him, and he's kind of that third cornerback right now, and they like to play four, at least they did, you know, last year before injury. But a lot of good stuff coming about Jalen McMurray, saying he's the most consistent of all those guys right now. The top end high talent of Jamar McCoy, I think, is going to be fun to watch. Ricky Gibson, as he continues to grow, and you know, Andre Turrentine at safety, carrying himself like he is the guy and he is the starter. And Jacoby Thomas, where's John Slaughter? Running back, secondary. Some of the same conversations we had coming into the spring, but that's kind of what I'm looking for over the next, you know, 2 weeks and the last two scrimmages they have before spring practice is all said and done.
Yeah, and then I think, you know, some other individuals who I think have stood out a little bit, taking advantage of opportunities. I think, you know, obviously Keenan Peely is on a pitch count, if you will. They're being cautious there. And with Elijah Herring out, that means Jeremiah Tealander has got a ton of run, you know, yeah, as at the number one, you know, with the number ones. I think Tealander's having a really good spring. I think he and William Inge have hit it off really, really well, which doesn't surprise me. Inge, you can tell just watching his demeanor on the field and the practice field, he's a teacher, you know, just a film junkie, you know, and I think Tealander, son of a coach, is just a guy who soaks up that kind of stuff. I think that's been a very smooth transition. Tealander and Brian Jean-Marie had a great relationship. I think Inge and Tealander have had a good relationship, and I think Tealander's earned and garnered a lot of praise by what he has gotten done to this point. You know,
sounds like Evan Spillman's having a good spring too.
Yeah, you know, for a guy who got here late, I think that he is a guy who plays really physical. And so I think when you look at it, you take that physicality, Eric, and you're like, all right, I don't have to teach him that. I gotta, you know, I might have to tell him, whoa, not sick him. Now it's about him learning to play in the framework. But for a guy who got here basically the Monday spring ball started, to make some noise, I don't know how much he's going to be in a rotation at linebacker, but with Carter out and some things there, he's gotten more opportunities this spring. It's a great decision by him to get here. I think he's definitely going to be a real factor for him on special teams. And we'll see how much William Inge rotates linebackers. Does he play it like Brian Jean-Marie did, play a lot of bodies, or does he see a little bit more kind of play your starters and don't have a heavy rotation there? We'll just have to see because we haven't seen that. You know, he hasn't had the opportunity to show that yet. So I think all in all, it's been a good spring, solid spring. Some questions that you're dealing with now that maybe you didn't think you're going to have to deal with because of the injury to Cam Seldon. I think your quarterbacks played well, and I think you like your transfers. I think you feel like you probably hit some the transfers. The Kesselman kid at tight end has been a bigger surprise. He and McMurray have been the two biggest surprises for me from the transfer portal standpoint. Everybody else had generated some buzz. Those two guys were kind of afterthoughts in a lot of ways going into spring. Those two guys have had two of the bigger springs of any of the transfers out there.
Yeah, and it makes you deeper. I mean, especially at tight end where you and I harp all the time the importance, but also about how thin you are because you play two. Suddenly you have a guy that feels like you can play and depend on in this offense, and they always talked about wanting to play three. We've never seen it. I doubt we'll see it, but that's your third guy right there, and so he's had a really good spring. And then, again, Jalen McMurray, I guess I knew that he was a veteran and all that, and you know, he kind of said, hey, D1 ball is D1 ball. I recognize this is the SEC, better players. It's a little bit faster, but you know, I know what I can do, and I know my strengths, and that's kind of what his message was on Monday. And he's like, and I'm just excited to continue to grow. And it feels like they like their corners. They're just trying to find that fourth one, Christian Conyer, Jordan Matthews, to kind of join the party. But I would agree with you. I think the transfers have been really good so far. They're going to have to continue to come along. This little last stretch of spring practice, man, I would very, very strenuous pitch count, if you will, as you pointed out, for Keenan Peely, for Cooper Mays, for Squirrel White, for Dylan Sampson.
Bubble wrap.
Get in and get wrapping out and let these other guys get to work.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I don't know that you need those guys need scrimmage work. I mean, like, I just would be really cautious. Squirrel's a little bit different because you got depth at receiver. But boy, at center, I'm not taking chances. I'm not taking any more chances at running back, given my concerns that I have there. Peely, I don't need to see a whole lot more, and I want to be careful with those veteran defensive linemen. I think you got to be smart to the finish line here. Talking about pitch counts, let's make this shift. Let's transfer over to a little baseball here as we wrap up the podcast. Who had Xander as the guy headlining Tennessee's pitching in a series win against Georgia after run ruled on Friday? Tennessee wins a Sunday afternoon slow pitch softball matchup on Saturday, or at least it felt that way.
Yeah.
And then they're throwing shutouts on Sunday. Welcome to college baseball, Eric Kane.
I mean, baseball in general is such a funny sport. And you'll see this in the majors too, man, the 3-game series. And one of these days, maybe not the first game, but one of these games, these teams will get beat, you know, 12-4. And then, you know, typically they're not that high scoring, but it'll bounce back and win a 3-2 ball game the next day. Baseball's a fickle sport, but what a response and what a gritty series win for Tennessee. You mentioned Xander, and I don't want to take anything away from Xander, but it's also, as I wrote in the 3-2-1, it's the Kirby and Xander show. Man, Kirby Cannell, what he gave Tennessee on Saturday, 5 innings. This is a dude that the last 2 years, last year specifically, would come in for a batter. They would take him out. He was a specialist, okay? He threw 90 pitches, 5 innings, career highs. Xander Seacrest, 6 innings, 104 pitches, career highs. Combined, they got 11 innings of three-run baseball. If you would have told me that Tennessee would have gotten 11 innings of three-run baseball from Kirby and Xander this weekend, I tell you, you're drunk. But good for them. They deserve it. They're great teammates. And Tony Vitello mentions those two guys and likes with Trey Lipscomb, who's had a great Major League Baseball debut over the weekend, and Drew Gilbert and some of them. So good weekend for Tennessee. You got to figure out some pitching. I mean, I don't think A.J. Causey is going to get rocked like that again. Now, he's not going to be as dominant as he was, but I think that was kind of an outlier. Drew Beam's got to pick it up. He's not looked good in SEC play overall. But this offense continues to show, like, hey, they can kind of pick up the slack when other parts are kind of, you know, not hitting on all cylinders. And you saw that a little bit this weekend.
All right. So let me ask you this as you move forward. You look on the screen there if you're watching on YouTube, if you're just listening. Tennessee travels to Auburn this weekend for a 3-game set. This is an Auburn team that's not been very good to start the year. They've played some of the best competition in the league. They do have a win over Arkansas, swept by A&M, swept by Vanderbilt. This is one on the road. If you're Tennessee, you feel like you got to get. My question is where's Tennessee going to be health-wise going into this thing? I know it's early in the week, but Terrence is bothered by a hamstring. Billy Amick's still trying to recover. We know Russell's not going to pitch. But where is this team right now with no midweek game, which is probably not the worst thing in the world for this team right now to kind of heal up a little bit? Where do you think they are heading into this critical road series where you got to take care of some business against the team everybody's going to expect you to beat if you're the 4th-ranked team in the country?
Yeah, and I'll say this. Tennessee's overranked, and Tony Vitello would tell you that Tennessee's overranked right now. Number 4 in the country, it's way too high. I think Tennessee's a top-10 team, but not number 4. But anyway, to your point, it's a good week not to have a midweek game. Tennessee's beat up right now, and you know it's the natural grind of a season. But you know you got Dylan Dreiling, who didn't miss a game this weekend. He missed last Tuesday. He was dealing with a little bit of a hammy, and turns out it wasn't that big of a deal. Kavars Tears, the fact that he was able to DH on Sunday, I think was a good sign. He had 3 hits as well, but he had a hamstring injury come up on Saturday night. You got Bargo that's back in the middle of things, and he's looking healthier, which is good. Billy Amick, that's a separate situation. His appendix, obviously, I don't think he's going to play this weekend. You know, we'll see as we get closer to the weekend, but I would say that he misses this weekend and then he's back. They're obviously going to be careful with that. As you mentioned, AJ Russell's not going to pitch this weekend. I think Marcus Phillips is ready to go. He's available. But just kind of is what it is right now. But it's great when you see guys like Hunter Ensley that continues to step up. Reese Chapman, who Tony Vitello has now mentioned twice that he could probably play third base if you need him to. He's come along. He's in over 400 right now. Again, you've got a lot of options, and credit the staff for developing, credit the staff for recruiting for these situations. But I do think Tennessee, for the most part, is going to be pretty healthy this weekend. with the exception of Billy Amick. And that's, again, that's not really an injury. That's just a medical issue that popped up. And then A.J. Russell, who's going to be out for a little bit and hopefully get back for the home stretch in May.
Yeah, we'll see what Tennessee looks like on Sunday as their to-be-determined pitcher. Might be Xander Seacrest, given what he did.
Should be Xander Seacrest right now. I mean, he's giving you reason to. I'm not going to say he's going to do that every week.
Right.
But I think he's earned that opportunity for sure.
Yeah, I think he certainly has as well. We'll see where they are this weekend as they take on the Auburn Tigers. Remember, it is a marathon, not a sprint in SEC baseball. But you're heading into weekend number four, right, in the SEC. I mean, we're moving along pretty quickly here. You got to be growing and getting better and continuing to develop, and we'll see where Tennessee's at this weekend as they take on the Auburn Tigers. We've got that going on. We've got a basketball coaching search on the women's side that has people talking. What does the men's roster look like with Rick Barnes and this team as they go through exit interviews and the portal remains wide open? Spring practice with their second major scrimmage on Thursday night. Really the biggest major scrimmage left. No offense to the orange and white game coming up. Lots and lots of stuff, Eric Kane, at VolQuest.com to check out right now. Not just the podcast that we do. Tons of recruiting coverage. We welcome Steve Wilfong to the On3 family, by the way. But tons of recruiting stuff. Tons of football stuff, basketball, baseball. There's a lot going on right now.
Yeah, and again, we know there's a lot of people that listen to our podcast every week, and we appreciate that, and watch us on YouTube that might not be members of the site. And if you're one of those people, encourage you, man. I mean, you know, right now it's no better time. There's so much happening right now. Your value, $1 for 1 month, and even you jump in there for a year subscription, you're going to get your money's worth. You're going to join a unique and awesome family that loves Tennessee Volunteers, and I'm biased, but I think we do it better than anybody in the market, Brent. So all that and more is over at VolQuest.com. Big thanks, as always, to our friends Exterior Home Solutions for bringing us coverage of this podcast each and every Tuesday and Thursday, 865-524-5888, and online at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com. For Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys, as always, for joining us here on the Tuesday morning VolQuest podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.